sarva all ashraman social orders upadaya completing sva on ashramena by the social orders kalatravan a person living with a wife Vyasana Arnavam, the dangerous ocean of material existence. Atyeti, one can cross over. Jalayanai, with seagoing vessels. Yata, as Arnavam, the ocean. Translation. As one can cross over the ocean with seagoing vessels, one can cross the dangerous situation of the material ocean by living with a wife. Purport. There are four social orders for cooperation in the endeavor for liberation from material existence. The orders of brahmacharya, or pious student life, household life with a wife, retired life, and renounced life all depend for successful advancement on the householder who lives with a wife. This cooperation is essential for the proper functioning of the institution of the four social orders and the four spiritual orders of life. Thus, Vedic Varnashrama system is generally known as the caste system. The man who lives with a wife has a great responsibility in maintaining the members of the other social orders, the brahmacharis, vanaprastas, and sannyasis. Except for the grihastas, or the householders, everyone is supposed to engage in spiritual advancement of life, and therefore the brahmachari, the vanaprasta, and the sannyasi have very little time to earn a livelihood. They therefore collect alms from the grihastas, and thus they secure the bare necessities of life and cultivate spiritual understanding. By helping the other three sections of society cultivate spiritual values, the household also makes advancement in spiritual life. Ultimately, every member of the society automatically becomes spiritually advanced and easily crosses the ocean of nations. So here is mentioned that the Vedic system, the Varnashram system, then, is meant for liberation. So all the four Varnas, all the four ashrams, they're meant for this purpose, not that only one is, another is not. They're all there, and they all cooperate, what is mentioned here. But the cooperation means in their own field. Despite some people's opinion, then the brahmacharis, grihastas, brahmacharis, vanaprastas, sannyasas, it's natural that they are taking from the grihastas because they're engaged in spiritual activities full time. Grihastha may say, well, we're all equal. Yes. Because we're all equal in, we're part of the same process. But it would be, one would have to be not very good at his arithmetic to say that the time in the day that one spends in the direct devotional service as a grihastha would be the same as a brahmachari, vanaprastha, and sannyas have the opportunity to do. Right? But because of maintaining these others, they get that benefit. You give money to someone who is fully engaged, you get the same benefit. Little known, not very popular these days, but you give a donation for the deity worship, and let's say you give a donation for the Mangalartik, then you get the same benefit for doing Mangalartik as the pujari who did it. Like that. This is Pancharatra. Means your opinion might be different, but don't mind, we couldn't care less. This is what the Shastra says. Like that. It may not be popular, but hey, who said that Krishna consciousness is popular? And at the same time, yeah, so that's that. Same way as someone who sees the puja gets the same benefit. Right? So, this is the system. So the grihasas, by supporting the other three, they get the benefits. So even though they can't be as much engaged, by supporting these others, they get the benefits. So it all balances out. It works for everybody. The Vedic system is very perfect in this way. Everyone benefits. If we take it, try to mold it into our own Western idea of what is Varnashram, yes, then nobody will be happy. Because the whole thing is one package. So either everybody's happy or nobody's happy. It doesn't work that some are happy, some aren't. Like that. So it mentions in here, it always mentions Grihastha with a wife. Right? The Pandavas, after graduation, were moving with their mother. And when they were in, after the forest, the fire at Varanavata, and they were approaching the Ganga, and at the Ganga, then the Gandharva Chitrarata was there with his wives. And when they came to the Ganga, it was nighttime, then he attacked them. And so afterwards they asked him, why did you attack us? You know, like that, because, you know, the Ganga can be approached at any time. He was saying, because I was there with my wives, and in front of women, then injustice can never be tolerated. And you guys graduated, but you're not married. So you're not brahmacharis, you're not grihasthas. So what are you? You're not following Varnashram. So therefore, we had a problem with that. Right? Means if we were alone here, okay, man to man, we can work it out. But if you're here with the women, then we don't tolerate such things. Right? So that's the thing. Of course, modern man doesn't believe in this. When the women are around, the men act just the same as they would if they were just with men. And if the women get upset, you know, what's their trip? You know, why are they always doing this? But somehow or another, the Vedic system has a different idea. So this whole point is that one situates oneself. One is either a brahmachari or one is a grihastha. Right? So even if one graduates, one's living as a brahmachari, but he's following the brahmachari duties. That's called a snataka. So the snataka, then he moves around as a brahmachari, and he further studies. He travels, sees the holy places, goes to special places where he can get more study than he could at the particular place where he was originally studying as a brahmachari, but he still follows the principles of brahmacharya. He doesn't now stop being a brahmachari, and he's not living with a wife. It doesn't really work, because how are you going to cross over the material, your material desires without a wife? Right? Your desire is everything is connected with the wife, so if you don't have one, how are you going to fulfill them? It won't work. So this bachelor ashram isn't actually an ashram. Right? You're either a brahmachari, or, you know, it didn't work, you're a vanaprastha. Right? That's the method. That's how it works. Very clear, very simple. So then in this, then he's making the point that one can cross over this dangerous. What is dangerous? Material world is dangerous because we can get distracted. Maya means not being able to see Krishna in something. It means that's anything. You don't see Krishna in it, it's Maya. Right? The thing itself, well, we say it's Maya, but actually it's not Maya. You're in Maya. It's just dead matter, right? Does that make sense? The devotee is standing in front of the deity, or let's say out in Jagannath, right? And the devotee is saying, here is the Lord of the universe. And the karmi is going, wow, what's that? So, who's in Maya? Now Jagannath's in Maya? Because the karmi doesn't see him as Krishna? Does that make sense? So Maya is you. Maya is us, not the material energy. Material energy is just dead matter. Right? Since it means Maya means that which is not. Dead matter is dead matter. That means it is what it is. Right? That means, so that's how you know it's not God, because it is what it is. And if it says I is what I is, then you know it's God. Right? That's how you tell the difference, right? Very important here. So the material energy is dead matter. It's acting as dead matter. So it's not Maya. The Maya is what you think it is. And if you think it's something other than Krishna, that's Maya. Right? So then the idea is then how are you going to deal with all those things that you think are important that aren't connected with Krishna, right, without a wife? How is that going to be dealt with, right? Because it's not simply by thinking about it that you generally get over it. Right? If you do it by thinking about it, you hear, you think, you get over it, that's called a naistika brahmachari. Right? You hear it, you contemplate it, you see it, but you have to get involved in it to learn, that's called a grihastha. Right? Because that's the point, is that you haven't learned by the other two, which is not a problem. Now you have the opportunity to learn by activity. So it's only by action that you'll cross. It's not by inaction. Not by, okay, we get married, now I ignore the wife, I'm very detached. No, you'll never cross anything like that. The only thing you'll cross is maybe a few plates across the living room. Right? But otherwise, then you're not going to cross anything. Right? You know, you might sink. Yes, that is. Yes, very dynamic. I'm sinking in the material ocean. Yes, it's going down. See, movement is there. It's positive. Yes. It's a reflection, right? So down farther, it's up there, you know. Hey, I just... Okay. Like that. So one has to be active. So it's the interaction with the wife, the family, everything that goes along with it that removes the things. I have a thorn. I have another thorn. I do nothing with them. The thorn doesn't come out. Oh, I'm very detached, but still the thorn's there. Oh, I don't get involved. Still the thorn's there. Right? So it's taking the thorn, and by action, you take the same thorn and remove it. That's what I said, is by proper living with a wife, she offers her service to the husband for his ultimate liberation. So that's the point, is that interaction between husband and wife, if it's done according to the Vedic rules, will liberate you from the material world. Right? Not put you in Maya. That's by acting how you think you should act. That will make you in Maya. Acting how the Shastras say you should act, that will liberate you. Right? Of course, this does not jive with, you know, Brahmachari talks of 30 years ago, but the whole point is this is what's going to get you out. Because those people who gave those fired up talks, where are they now? What ashram? Think about it. So, the point is, it's the proper interaction. It's the thorn with the thorn. Why do we use that term? Right? Why don't we use tweezers with a thorn? Right? No, we said thorn with the thorn. Because the same thing that got you there is the same thing that's going to get you out. Right? Isn't it? It's just the way it works. Dhruva Maharaj, what was his problem? Right? He wants to be Lord of the Universe. Right? So, then what's going to get him out of that problem? Right? Being involved in wanting to be the Lord of the Universe, but in the proper way. Right? And what's the result of that? Then he will be the Lord of the Universe, but now for Krishna. It didn't change. Right? Right? The improper application of wanting to be the Lord, the proper application of wanting to be the Lord, and then the proper application of being in the position of the Lord. It's all the same. That's Krishna consciousness. Right? This idea of I did this, now I rejected that, that's called impersonalism. That's what the jnanis do. Jnanis give up action. Right? But Krishna says, but there is action in that inaction because they still have material desire. So they don't appear to do anything, but within their heart, still something's going on. So the proper is how to deal with it so that by dealing, one removes it. But that means you have to deal with it according to Krishna's idea, not our idea. Right? Because our idea is how to enjoy eternally in the material world. Right? You should just be happy all the time, right? There, but unfortunately, you eat, but then afterwards, your stomach feels too full. Then finally, when it lightens up, and then, now this is nice, then you get hungry. So if you look at it, how much time in the day is the eating process really great? Right? 15 minutes, 20 minutes, you know? If you know old European style, you can drag it on for 3 hours, okay, like that. But, okay, still, that's what are you about the other 21 hours of the day? Right? Then what? You know, you have to get the money, you have to buy things, you have to cook it, you have to wash the pots, you have to pay the bills, right? You have to serve it, you have to digest it, you know, then there's the toilet, right? So if you can, if we go back to the beginning, if we'll, you know, dust off those mathematics that we used all those years when we were kids, that they told were very important, then look at it, add it up. How much time in the day goes with that? How much time is not? Right? So some is good, some is neutral, some is not so good. Okay, so that's kind of close to the formula of how much you're going to be happy in family life. So this idea 24/7, I'm not sure where anybody gets the idea that that comes from. Where does it come from? I mean, is it generated by that smooth wooden table at the bar or something like that? You know, I'm not sure. Is it when the glasses slide down it generates that idea and that, and then all the guys sitting in there in those stools, they all say, yeah, it should be like this. Where does it come from? It doesn't come from Shastra, right? It doesn't come from Krishna. You can ask the ladies, it doesn't work like that. So why is it this half of the room thinks that's the way it is? Right? Where did it come from? And all of you sit around, pat each other on the back, say, yeah, it should be like that. And everybody says, yes. What? From television. Comes from Hollywood. Okay, yes, those Hollywood guys, you know. Got to get them. What was those guys, you know? But I'm not sure. Who was that guy? Big guy? Yeah, some of those guys, the big he-men and all that, they were all gay, you know. the idea of romantic love, I think it goes back farther. Look at Troy, right? They fought for 10 years over one lady, you know. You know, like that. So, you know, destroyed an empire, destroyed two empires for one lady. I think it goes back farther. Hollywood maybe made it popular that's how we know it. Yeah, like that. But, you know, unless you watch something like Closer or something, you know, then... You know, then, so, this idea has always been there that there will always be happiness. But the material world is not a place of happiness. Therefore, one is trying to cross over the dangerous situation. It's dangerous if it's not connected to Krishna. As soon as it's connected to Krishna, it's not dangerous anymore. Right? Then it becomes helpful, it becomes useful. Right? Just like we want to take prasad. We're hungry. Let's say we don't want to take prasad. We want to eat. So now if we always eat prasad, that means we eat. It doesn't change. We eat according to the rules given by Krishna. Then we're liberated. Does that make sense? So it goes like that with any other engagement of the senses. It's that simple. Right? You just have to know the process. You have to know how to cook. You have to know how to offer things. You have to know, like that, what is appropriate, what's not. You know, I mean, it's like you go out in the back. Little girls are sitting there. You know, a few leaves, a couple of rocks, some sand. You know, and then you have strawberry kitchery. You know, like that. How it works, I don't know, but they're very happy with it. But you know, the thing is to know what actually works and what doesn't. You know, like that. So that's the idea. What functions? What works? So that's what the Shastras say. Right? So that's what we get. So we get here. These here is people dealing with it. You want to know what to do. Here it is, right here. Kasyapa Muni with his wife at Sandhya discussing whether they're going to have a child or not. Right? Here it is. Oh, Bhagavatam's not practical. Here it is. Oh, it's 5,000 years ago. Okay, nowadays you're going to tell me no husbands and wife try to have children. Right? That's what you're going to tell me. Right? You're going to say, oh, it's old-fashioned, doesn't work. You're going to tell me it's different. You're going to tell me the process they're going to use to conceive that child is different today than before. Right? Right? So, here, right in your face, you tell me with a clear conscience that, yes, it doesn't work. I'd like to hear one person say it. That he's going to conceive a child differently than anyone today is going to do it. And then tell me that this 5,000-year-old book, you know, can be thrown in the dustbin because it's, you know, archaic. Yes? Anybody here did a different process? I mean, of course, there's always the Immaculate Conception process, you know, like that. I'm sure many of you here are using that one, right? Ben? So the reality is, the Bhagavatam applies today as much as it did yesterday, as much as it did 5,000 years ago, as much as it did millions of years ago. In fact, the Bhagavatam was the first thing spoken to Brahma. Right? The Veda was spoken, then it was stolen by the Madhu and Kaitava demons. Then Brahma said, because life is short, right? Brahma said, right? Life is short, that I might die at any moment. So therefore, please give me the essence of the Veda first. Then teach me the whole Veda. He got the Chaturshlokas. So that's first. So it was there, and that's before the creation. Right? It's just like you look at the instructions and you make the thing. Right? So looking at the instructions of the Chaturshloki, then Brahma created the universe. So it works. It's practical. It works today. So this idea that Veda doesn't work today is the concept of those, the uninformed. It sounds good. It sounds great. You know, it just, I say, oh, it's not practical. Okay, so it's a good, you know, great buzzwords, it works, and the mind goes, oh, yeah, right, yeah, cool. But where was the intelligence? Where did that factor in here? Where did the person who created the universe and says this is how it works, then we can say it doesn't work like that, since when has the small become bigger than God? Right? So, therefore, then, the whole ideas, these four varnas and ashrams, they cooperate. It's part of a system. But in it, everyone has to know what is their part. You can't step over the line. Right? Like that. Does that make sense? The Grihastha's saying, everyone's going to get married. What do we need brahmacharis for? That's stepping over the line. It's not your right. Right? At the same time, the brahmacharis, vanprasas, sannyasis, interacting with your wife and your attachments to your family, that's all maya, that's nonsense. Just, you know, don't do that, you know. That's also stepping over the line. It's not your right. In other words, there's a position for everyone to perfect themselves. Right? Does that make sense? So everybody has a need how to perfect themselves, and everyone has the right to perform that duty. And no one else has the right to say they don't have that. Krishna says, you have a right to perform your duty. Right? And in that verse, it didn't say, there wasn't anything, you know, have a right to perform your duty, and a right to tell everybody else, you know, that they can't, if their duty is different from yours, it's maya. Right? Was that one of the padas of the verse there? No, right? The fifth pada, right? We can make a movie, right? The fifth pada, right? Try to change Hollywood a bit, you know, it's like that, you know, work on it. Does that make sense? Right? So, this is the point, is to inform ourselves so we know what are our duties. Performing our duties, then we will be an important part of the whole thing. Everybody has something to add. The training as a brahmacharya is the foundation for the other three. It's not that, if you're going to be a grihastha, you don't need to be a brahmacharya. You have to be as good a brahmacharya to be a grihastha as to be a brahmacharya. And you need the same brahmacharya as a vanaprastha, as a sannyasi. It's the same thing. It's the foundation. It's just like, for doing arithmetic, then we need, you know, numbers 1 to 10 and addition, subtraction, multiplication, division. But when we do quantum physics, we don't need any numbers. We don't need all this arithmetic. Is that true? No, it's the same thing. You don't know your arithmetic, you can't do quantum physics. You can't do geometry. You can't do calculus. You can't do trigonometry. You can't do algebra. All it is fancy arithmetic applied to specific situations. Arithmetic's generic. You can apply it anywhere. Trigonometry, you want to know the angle between two things. Geometry, you want to know the volume of something. It's specific. But the methods used are generic. that make sense? So grihastha is specific, vanaprastha is specific, sannyasa is specific. Brahmachari, that's the generic platform, the building block of all the other three. That's understood, we'll have strong brahmachari ashram. It's not understood, nobody cares about brahmacharis. You don't care about brahmacharis, then you get a bunch of grihasthas that don't support the rest of the society. Right? A badly trained brahmachari doesn't support, doesn't know his position, doesn't know how to relate, isn't even a good family person. Right? So it works together. It's all part of the same package. That's why in the Vedic system, such importance was put on the training of the brahmacharis. Right? The girls are trained, the boys are trained, everything works very nice. Right? Previous verse says, training of the boys brahmachari, the training of the girls chastity. A faithful wife and spiritually trained brahmachari are a good combination for advancement of the human mission. Right? So that's the thing. The boy is spiritually situated, the girl is situated properly, then it works. It's very strong. It's a good combination. And wherever anyone's one person's strength is, that's where the other person's weakness is. That's why it's meant, they go, what goes together. Right? Where the man is strong, that same exact point is where the woman is weak. Where the woman is strong, that point is where the man is weak. That's why that combination is made. Right? Or how the sannyasi relates with the other orders, where their strength is where their weakness is, or where their weakness, where their strength is. Right? Same with the vanaprasthas. Right? Same with the brahmacharis. Right? Brahmachari has no attachment. He can look at it very broadly. You say, it's like this. He goes, oh, okay. Well, maybe, but you don't know. In this situation, then it's different. No, it's the same thing. You don't know how to look at it to understand it in that way. Oh, I got some numbers here, and they don't actually work like any other mathematical numbers like that. They're actually different. No, they're still numbers. They still work within the mathematical system. You just have to know how to apply it, what to apply. What formula to apply to get what I want? I want to know the circumference, therefore I use one formula. I want to know the radius, the diameter, I use another. I want to know the area, I use a different one. So if I'm using the wrong one, I'll get the wrong answer. And then who's at fault? Me or the numbers? So that's the whole point. The Vedic system is never to blame. Anyone who blames it is an atheist. It can't be blamed. It's unblameable. It comes from Krishna. It's eternal. But we're the ones that are in Maya. We're the ones that make mistakes. Conditioned souls make mistakes. So we as conditioned souls make a mistake. Then we take responsibility for that, educate ourselves, move forward, practice it, and then make it right. That's what works. Otherwise, it's atheism. Otherwise, what if we can say? You can't say being practical. Okay, practical atheism. Okay, cool. You know, like that, yeah. Like that. Does that make sense? It's there. You see, all these verses, what is Prabhupada talking about? He's talking about the culture. Practically, every verse you go, it's all about the culture. It's all about the varnashram and how to apply it. Right? And he's giving different points in there. How to deal. And we see in the verse here how he's speaking. What are the points he's making? So you know these points didn't work. Right? So, yeah. So we have to understand is that it's a complete package. You have to put the whole thing together. But it starts from brahmacharya. Right? It means you have a society, it's maintained, because you're brahmacharis, then they become grihasthas, they become vanaprastha, they become sannyas. If you don't have that, then the grihasthas, they'll create the proper environment in which the brahmacharis can grow up. If you don't have that, then the vanaprasthas, they, because being the retired, mature grihasthas, they have the experience, they'll train the grihasthas, who will then, have proper brahmacharis who then they can train. If that doesn't work, then the sannyasis will establish it. Right? So we shouldn't hear, oh, you're sannyasi, you don't know what you're talking about. I'll throw it back in your face. You're grihastha, you're too attached, you're too blinded by the trees, you can't see what you're talking about. In fact, who spoke this book? a grihasta? Keep that in mind next time you say such foolish comments. The point is someone who doesn't know the field and makes comments, yes, you can say you don't know the field, but someone who knows the field, someone who's detached from it, will give better view on it than someone who is attached to it. That's just the way it is. Right? That's just the way anything in life works. The person who is detached from something is able to perform better if they're following the formulas. So keep that in mind next time that one's about to fall out of your mouth. But you can choose who it is you're going to hear that from. But to say only grihasthas have the right on how grihastha ashrama, that's foolishness. Absolute foolishness. Because they're the ones that are entrenched. They're inside, they know what they're feeling, they know what they're going through, so if someone can give them practical work that'll work for that, then that's the person you take advice from. If they can't give, then just say, I'm sorry, you know, the situation's a little different, you know, something like that. You know what I'm saying? Just like the kings. They keep Brahmins who are expert in the field of politics. But are they doing the politics? Was Chanakya, was he therefore part of the thing? Was he living, that was his occupation, that the king was giving him money, he was living off of that? No, he went out begging. But there, Chanakya, a Brahmin, knowing the field of politics, he made Chandragupta into the emperor of the world. That's how it works. Vashishta makes, you know, the kings he works with into emperors of the world. That's how it works. Does that make sense? That's why in the Vedic system, the teachers, the Brahmins, right, the seniors, you know, the parents, all these are considered valuable. Why? Because they know something and they can help you. Right? But you have to choose the authority that knows who it wants. Someone who, you want to know music, go to someone who knows music. Don't go to someone who doesn't know music. Right? But just to say that, oh, they're not in your position, you don't understand, then you're going to say, oh, you don't understand American dogs. You know, they bark, you throw a stick, they run after it, they slobber, they wag their tail, they got fleas. So you people in China wouldn't understand what dogs are, you know? There are no dogs, you ate them all, you know, hey. You know what I'm saying? It doesn't work. It's worked up to now. It's created a smokescreen that has entrenched the grihastha ashram in a ditch. That's what it's done for you. It hasn't been progressive. Where has it gotten anywhere? Where is the improvement? Where is the getting out? Where is the liberation? Where is it? Go ahead, name the couples. That's the problem. You can't throw the baby out with the bathwater. Means, does that make sense? We have to take that this system was given to us by Prabhupada because of his affection for us, not because he wanted to see us suffer. Krishna has given us this system because of his affection for us. He follows it himself. Prabhupada followed it. The others followed it. And not that they didn't follow it in modern times. Rupa Goswami was moving with who? Right? That one famous picture of Rupa Goswami, you know, sitting there with the kopins and the chain, you know, kind of kneeling position. Who was he talking to? Akbar, the emperor of India. And they were respecting him. Right? Who gave Jiva Goswami the authority over the property between the four trees? You know, Imlitala, Sringarvat, what's the one? Bamsivat, like, what's the fourth tree? I don't remember. But between those four trees, that area is his. Vrindavan belonged to Jiva Goswami. Who gave him that? Right? Man Singh, the commander-in-chief of Akbar's army. Who built Rupa Goswami's temple? Right? Man Singh, 20 years at his expense. Right? Who is Srivast Thakur moving with? Right? The king of Vishnupur. Right? Who is Bhaktivinoda Thakur moving with? All the people that changed India. Right? Rabindranath Thakur's older brother was a friend of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. They used to hang out and talk philosophy. Right? So you must have picked something up. Right? Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Who did he move with? Right? Like Prabhupada would go on a morning walk, right, in Bombay or in Los Angeles, qualified gentlemen would go walking with Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur had a launch. A big boat. And he'd go out on the Ganga and go up and down for a japa ride on his boat. And all the distinguished, leaders of Calcutta, all the gentlemen, they would come on that boat with him. Right? Who was it that Prabhupada couldn't talk to or move with comfortably? Right? Ministers. People on the television. Reporters. Right? Riffraff of the Lower East Side. Who couldn't he move with? Right? So, therefore, this idea that the Vedic isn't practical and doesn't work in the modern age, there's always been a modern age, and our devotees have always moved with it. There's never been a time when the leaders of our sampradaya weren't moving with the modern times. Never. So it's a misnomer. Sounds good. Okay. So if you want to do a thing like Buddha, okay. They're following the Vedas. They're misapplying it. Throw out the Vedas. Okay. It works. But it doesn't establish Krishna consciousness. It establishes Buddhism. So then you've heard some, leaders, they say all kinds of things and it's not really great. It's not progressive for family life. So now you're going to throw out the Vedas or you're going to throw out what they said. So you want to be a devotee or you want to be a Buddhist? Right? Remember, one who doesn't accept the Vedas is an atheist. Buddhists are atheists. Right? So you can be Vaishnava by philosophy, atheist by culture. Yes, you could be, if you want to be. So don't go and try to cover it with some, nice, pleasant, little politically correct words and then say, oh, no, it doesn't matter. It's not actually atheism. It's direct, upfront atheism. Now, it's just a matter of, and so for 30 years, imagine if for 30 years we've been trying to understand this and practice it and apply it rather than oppose it, where we'd be at? 30 years is a long time. You become very good at something. I just heard yesterday someone said that Prabhupada had mentioned, you chant Hare Krishna for 30 years and then you become, something special happens. Right? Generally in anything, 30 years at it, it's considered expert. Even the modern, they say, what is it? I think it's 10,000, is it 10,000 hours? 10,000 days is 30 years. Okay, but there's also something, I think, there's something that 10,000 hours or something, then you become very expert at something. So you put in 6 hours a day on something, then after a while you come. So, it's not an uncommon thing. So if we were trying to understand it rather than run away from it or say, oh, we don't care for the rules, so then we don't... So why don't you just say, translate that into, from the newspeak into, we don't care for the purports. Right? I only care for what I think, because what I think is what's happening right now. That is the time, place, and circumstance. What I'm thinking right this second, that's what's important. And it's 5 to 9, and the guy said he's supposed to stop at this time, and I'm thinking about breakfast. So, hey. Like that. Okay, so. So in other words, the whole idea is the Vedic system is a complete system where all four varnas and ashrams support each other because they're all playing their part. And that makes a system where all four varnas and all four ashrams are able to liberate themselves from material existence and go back to Godhead. That's what it's for. It's not exclusive for this varna or this ashram. all of them can go, anyone in any position, because it's all being done according to the Vedic, which will liberate you, and it's all being done for Krishna, which will get you love of Godhead. Right? So that's the idea. Okay. So any question? Yes. One question and we'll finish. Yes. Yes. Okay, so didn't the desire happen? No, what I was saying is afterwards you still dealt in the same area. Means the process of standing on his toes and not breathing with the purpose of getting a kingdom, but he connected that to Krishna, that he was going to get the kingdom from Krishna by seeing Krishna, that's what removed the thorn. You understand? You understand? So in other words, we're dealing with three parts here. The part of him before just wanting a kingdom, he got angry with his father, wants a kingdom bigger than that, right? There isn't one bigger than that, but whatever, he wanted one anyway, he's a kid. Then, so that's there. So that's going to get him nowhere. Politics, this, that, it'll get him, it'll entrench him in material life. Then following the order of the instruction of his mother to seek God to get it, that's the beginning of removing the thorn, but with the same determination, right? In other words, an action, only by action are you going to get a result. But unless you're attached to a result, you're not going to work. So if you're not attached to doing this activity because it pleases Krishna, then you have to be attached to the activity because you want the result. Right? But if the result is given to Krishna, then you get purified. Right? But the point is if you're not attached to something, you're not going to do anything. That's why someone whose attachments are destroyed in a non-progressive way, they do nothing. Right? In fact, they even think of killing themselves. Because it wasn't removed according to a progressive process. Right? So in other words, then he goes, and then now by the grace of, you know, sincerely following the order of his mother to find God, then Krishna sees this as serious, put him in contact with Narad Muni, right? So instead of just the Vartma Pradarshak, now he gets the actual proper Diksha and Siksha Guru. Then following, but he still had the same determination. He wasn't then standing on his toes to get love of God. He was standing on his toes to get a kingdom. But because he did that according to Guru Sadhu and Shastra, therefore he was purified, saw God, then came to that platform of understanding, actually my going after the kingdom as a goal, that was bogus. That process I used, that was bona fide, but my goal was wrong. Now my goal is the Supreme Lord. Then now he can run a kingdom simply for Krishna. But he still does the same thing. Krishna always engages the nature in his service. Right? Yeah, okay? So we have three parts there. So maybe it wasn't clear between them. But it was a very good observation you made there. Okay, very good. Like that. I'm worried we've crossed the time, but we'll stop now. People can leave, and if you want to continue, we'll continue with questions after 2-3 minutes, and then we can, like that. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivrinda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi. Okay. Yes, sir. Is it the Shravanam Kirtan or the Varnashram Dharma? It's a combination of them because we're conditioned. Because it's like this. If we weren't conditioned, then, you know, hearing one name, then we'd be, you know, we would start experiencing ecstatic symptoms. And that taste would drive us forward very dynamically towards prema. But if you're conditioned, then we're distracted by the things of our body. Because we can say, it's Shravanam Kirtanam, which is true. But how much of the day do you spend in Shravanam Kirtanam in reality? Therefore, it's a combination between them. Right? So for the conditioned soul, then specifically, then the Bhagavat and the Pancharatrik, they work together. And the Vedic is the support of the Pancharatrik. So in this way, between these three, we keep ourselves busy 24 hours a day, so body, mind, and words are engaged. So we have Bhagavat is direct, Pancharatrik, at least the worship aspect is direct, and the others are directly connected to the worship. And then Varnashram, it may be more or less direct depending upon the desire. But in any case, it connects one to the Shastra, so that means one is connected to Krishna. The more one understands it, the more benefit one gets. So, what the Varnashram will liberate you. It will not give you prema. The performance of the of Varnashram activities to please Krishna, it's the desire to do it to please Krishna, that will assist in getting you prema. So there's the two things are going on simultaneously. In other words, there's the medium, and then there's what you're trying to express through that medium. So, in other words, the devotee is trying to express his affection for Krishna through the medium of Varnashram. But why he uses Varnashram is because there's a specific attachment that's there that is getting in the way of his developing pure love for Krishna. So, the process is so perfect, the same thing that entangles you is the same thing that will get you out if it's used in connection with the Shastra. If it's not, it'll only get you more entangled. That's why it's very important to follow the Shastra. Then by doing that, it works very well. You know? Is that okay? Yeah. Yeah, sorry. It's a good, very good point. You know? Very good point. Yes. Isn't that the same? Okay, you're working for something, you know, because you want a result, and then you give that to Krishna. So that purifies you. So isn't that the same process that they're using in Goloka? The form of it's the same, but the point is they want the result for Krishna. The point is, unless you're attached to a result, you're not going to act. Right? That's how it works. Thinking, feeling, then willing. Right, feeling is the need for a result, is a need. Thinking is an attraction. Feeling is a need. Right, then willing is you perform the activity. Right, so you're going sambandha prayojana abhideya. Right, so if there's no prayojana, why will you work? How do you know what you're working is useful? Why would you work if it's not going to get something? Right, you know what I'm saying? That's why you say they're kids. They pick up a stick and go out in the field and just start roaring and just smashing, you know, plants and knocking flowers off their stems. And what are they doing? Nothing. You ask them, why are you doing that? I don't know. So you called it childish. Right? Mature means you do an activity, it's connected with the result that you want. The difference is in the spiritual world, the result they want is for Krishna, to please Krishna. The material world, the result you want is for your own benefit. Either you want the facility or you want to be freed from it. Right? In other words, you want the thorn or you want to use a thorn to take out the thorn. You know what I'm saying? The Madhyama does it because it's comfortable for him to use that conditioned nature, because that's what it is. It's not a trouble. But the result's for Krishna. So it's a mix between what they do in the spiritual world and what they do in the material world. Right? Material world, they want the result. Spiritual world, they don't want the result. All right? But they don't have a conditioned nature. Right? So it's closest to what it is. Right? Means, in other words, it's the same formula. In the spiritual world, with a spiritual body that has a spiritual nature, they do actions according to that nature. And result is for Krishna. Right? Material world, you have a conditioned nature, but use that conditioned nature to get a result for Krishna, for his pleasure. That's the Madhyama. That's Naishkarmya. Right? The Sakam, he has a conditioned nature. He performs the activity to get the result for himself, but he gives it to Krishna, so he gets the spiritual result. Right? The materialist, he has a conditioned nature, he has a material result he wants. He wants it for himself, he works hard, he gets it, and he keeps it. Therefore, he stays here. Right? Does that make sense? So, the formula actually doesn't change. It's just the perspective on it. Ultimately, nothing changes between there and here. What changes is, over there, you see things as they are, as everything's connected to Krishna. Everything you do, everything you see is connected to Krishna. Here, everything you do and see is not connected to Krishna. That's the difference. So the devotional process is to get you to connect it to Krishna. But if there's things that you, by dealing with them, you're going to forget Krishna immediately, therefore, then those things are restricted. You understand? It's not a problem with the thing, right? The problem's not with women. Therefore, the brahmacharis don't deal with them. The problem is, if the brahmachari did deal with them, he'd forget about Krishna, right? Is the 5-year-old remembering Krishna? No, he's dealing with women, right? Are moms a problem? No, moms aren't a problem. But for a 5-year-old, if he wants to advance spiritually and in knowledge, they are. Not because the mom's the problem, because his attachment to the mom is the problem. So his mommy will do everything. Right? Oh, you know, okay, so here, do 2 + 2 = 4. Oh, it's too difficult. You do it, mommy. Right? Does he get anywhere? No. Therefore, he's separated from his mommy and put into the school. Then he has to do it himself. You understand? So the interaction with the woman is not the problem. Just his attachment so much, he, by interacting, he would never remember Krishna. Therefore, he's removed from it. Those that are removed from it then, don't have any need for interacting with women, then they stay brahmachari. Those who do, now they can go back with that knowledge and now deal with their wife and their mothers and daughters according to Shastra. Otherwise, the 5-year-old, what is he doing according to Shastra? Right? So that's the point. So therefore, if you have a man who's interacting with a woman not according to Shastra, what do you have? Right? You know, a 5-year-old with a beard and a very large false ego. Right? That's in reality what you got. And if you think it's funny, just ask over here and they'll confirm it. Does that make sense? So, in other words, the formula doesn't change, but you have to see the perspective on it does. You know what I'm saying? Like, if I take I and mine, or I take fear and attachment, they're the same thing. But the perspective is slightly different because they have something different they're showing you. I is, you know, I am, because I am, therefore, this is mine. So that's a materialistic concept. Right? Fear and attachment is, I'm afraid of that I, meaning that I'm servant of God, because I think I am I. Right? Does that make sense? And that attachment, that comes, I call it mine. What I'm attached to, I call mine. So I have to give up attachment. Right? So that's what Prabhupada will say. You have to give up attachment. You have to give up the sense of ownership. It's the same thing. But slightly different perspective. Because ownership, mine means relationship. Attachment is the tattva. Mine means is the rasa. Right? Because you can explain it philosophically, and any attached devotee understands it's an attachment. And they have no real problem that it is an attachment. Right? But because of the false ego of I, therefore the mind, they're so strongly, the relationship is what they don't want to give up. The concept of giving up the attachment isn't really the problem that the devotee has. It's the relationship that is there based on that attachment. That's the difficulty. You understand? So it's a different perspective on the same thing. So the formulas are the same. Right? It's just what perspective, because of the application. That's the whole point. Time, place, and circumstance. The Veda has to be applied. Therefore, you have to know which aspect of the formula to use. Right? Then it works. You know, a mechanic, if he can't tell which wrench to use for which bolt, he just says, well, it's a bolt and this is a wrench, it's got to work. You know, keep it simple, stupid. Right? You know, so then it won't work. Oh, we just can't, Hare Krishna, we don't care for all these rules, so I just use the one wrench. I have the one wrench philosophy like that. I have this book here, you know, it's a bestseller, the one wrench philosophy. Right? But does it work? No. It works on that one bolt that wrench fits, and everyone goes, see, it works so perfectly. What about all the other 10 bolts that it doesn't fit? That's why someone else writes a book. The smaller wrench theory. You know? Or someone else goes, the big and small wrench theory. Or the multiple wrench theory as opposed to the, you know, singular wrench theory. You know, and then somebody, and then, of course, you know, then the Australian will come along and say, yeah, we'll just use our teeth, you know, hey, you know. One of the wrenches are for puftas, right? You know, like that, you know? You know, so like that. So, does that make sense? So, the whole point is you have to know the formula is the same, but you have to know what's the perspective on it, what's the angle on it. That's the expertise in time, place, and circumstance. That's where devotees in the past have failed in applying the Vedic formulas. It's not that what they're saying is not correct, but they haven't been able to apply that correctness to the situation. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? Like that, okay. The wife's supposed to be satisfied. Okay, so then the wife is upset, and the husband says, well, you're supposed to be satisfied, it's your duty, you know, like that, you know, what am I supposed to do? I'm doing whatever I can, I'm getting everything, and I'm trying my best, you know, why you're not satisfied, that's your problem. Okay, so was that the right application of that formula? No. Point is, she's not satisfied. Why is she not satisfied? Because she can only be satisfied, she's the passive element, the man's the active element. That means something that the man is doing is not, therefore, falling into the satisfactory field. You can't be satisfied with something with inaction. Right? Something has to happen. You can be satisfied with that. Right? Does that make sense? So therefore, the man should be looking at, okay, what is it I'm doing that's not working? Why are you not satisfied? What is it that I'm not doing? Ask that question, then you might get an answer. You understand? So therefore, then the man will think, well, I applied the Vedic thing, and these women, you know, they're so untrained, they can't follow, as if the man is trained. Right? In other words, how badly the women are trained, that badly the men are trained. But since the man is the leader, the women follow their lead, and therefore then they mirror that same bad training. So if you're saying, this woman is badly trained, what you're saying is, this woman is reflecting my bad training and doing exactly what I do. Therefore, any complaint I have about her and saying that everything that she does wrong, all I'm saying is I'm doing those things wrong. But, unfortunately, you need training to be able to understand that. But that's the proper application of the man leads, the woman follows. That's the proper application. Not, you know, I say do this, and then you just, yes, yes, massa. Yowza, massa. Right? Does that make sense? That's not how it works. So that's the thing. If you can't do this, then the men will say, ah, well, it's not practical. I tried it, but, you know, women are this, that. It's a different thing. And the women will just go, this varnashrama won't have nothing to do with it. Right? And then these women won't let their men be involved. Does that make sense? But was it varnashrama's fault? No. It was misapplication of the formulas. You understand? So that's the thing. Krishna consciousness is a science, like nectar devotion, the science, the complete science of bhakti yoga. It's a science. Take that science, apply it. The better you understand the science, the better you apply it, the better results you get. Because ultimately, that's the main science. We're using these lower sciences, but they're being applied on the same formulas that are of the higher science, with the purpose of getting to there. Does that make sense? So the same formula goes, whether it's spirit in bhakti, in gyan, or in karma. It's the same formula. Right? Rasa doesn't change. Tattva doesn't change. What changes is our perspective on it. Therefore, because our perspective changes, therefore you have to apply that formula according to that changed perspective. Then it will catch the individual and then move them forward. Does that make sense? So it's a science. So that's why you can discuss one science and immediately flip into the other. We can be talking these things here, all of them, but they all support each other. It's the same principle. Right? Does that make sense? Right? What makes the Grihastha ashram the main ashram? What makes it different than the other three? What's the one thing? Huh? Wife. Okay. So, therefore, all rasas are nourished by which one? What do they all come from? What's the Adi Rasa? Conjugal Rasa. Okay. You understand? So everything comes out of there. Therefore, all the other orders come out of the Grihastha Ashram. Does that make sense? The point is there's nothing in any book anywhere that's not talking the same thing. All Shastras are saying exactly the same thing. It's just they're taking the perspective of the particular audience because they have a specific attachment. So therefore, you can take one on the Vedic, you can take one and turn it into the other. You can take mucus, bile, and air and turn it into Sundini, Sambit, and Ladini. So Sambit, Ladini, and Sundini work together and interact the same way mucus, bile, and air reacts with each other. Therefore, from Ayurveda, you can understand the spiritual tattva. And from the spiritual tattva, you can explain medicine. You understand? That's the point. There isn't a difference. It's one. There's only Krishna. There's only one topic. That's Krishna. And then there's 14 main perspectives of Krishna. That's called the 14 books of Vedic knowledge. Then you have to take that and apply it to the specific conditioning of the living entity, or the specific perspective of the particular living entity that you're dealing with, either yourself or another person, or that interaction. Right? There's not many, many topics. There's only one topic. So if you're not getting to Krishna from your topic, then you're not actually understanding the topic. Right? If you learn driving and it doesn't result in being able to drive a car, you know, you just sit in your room and go vroom, 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 like that. Did you understand driving? No. So that's the point. If your study of any branch doesn't bring you closer to Krishna, you miss the point. You take up astrology and now you're out there in the New Age, you know, circle and not associating with devotees. You miss the point. If it doesn't bring you closer to Krishna, it doesn't give you more understanding of Krishna, you miss the point. It's a waste of your time. Other than it gets you money. Now, if you use the money for Krishna, then it gets engaged that way. But as far as knowledge goes, it's a waste of time. It's simply a money spinner for you. Astrology doesn't bring anyone away from Krishna, right? What does that mean? The one astrologer, Lord Chaitanya was there, and the astrologer walks into his house, and he says, can you read my, tell me who I was in my last life, right? And he sits down and calculates and goes, you were Lord Narayan. Astrology doesn't take anyone away. It's people's misunderstanding of it. But why astrology gets the brunt? Why not men are from Mars, women are from Venus? What about seven habits of successful people? What about the secret? You know? What about all those? I haven't seen that since devotees have started that they've come any closer to Krishna, or the social or economic fabric of the society has improved one bit. In fact, I only watch it day by day get worse. Certain individuals who have an understanding of those things, how to connect it to Krishna, they try to do something with them. But most are just out making money with anybody leaves the temple. Right? You check the temple after the secret has passed through and see how many people are still in there, you know, after 3 months. And then you tell me that that's not. But no one will notice that. Oh, astrology, that takes people away. It's Vedic. Vedic's bad. Right? Because you're dealing with atheism. You're dealing with an atheistic mentality. Prabhupada, he wouldn't go out on Thursday afternoon. Why? Because it just politically was incorrect. It was one of the seven habits of the great successful people. You know, Venetians and Martians would never go out on a Thursday afternoon. You know, if you were planning very strategically, you wouldn't use Thursday. Or, according to systems, Thursday afternoon doesn't exist. Why? Because of astrology. Thursday afternoon, it's not known in the north, therefore anyone who studied in the north won't know it. And they'll say, I don't understand it. It's called Kalbela. It's something only in south they know. Is that because everything in Panchang is fixed. So a day is fixed. The day of the week is fixed. It's one of the things. The titi moves. It's one of the things, but it's one of the, you know, five things to consider. But a day, the bara, you know, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, it's fixed. And then each day has a karna. It's divided into two halves. And then within that you have your muhurtas, like 48-minute, you know, blocks. So in the day, in those muhurtas or those karnas, those are fixed and they have certain qualities. You know what I'm saying? So therefore, Thursday afternoon will always be bad to start a journey. Like that, depending upon what titi, what nakshatra, what karna is there, what the paksha, the ayana, you know, the uttarayana, dakshinayana, what the cycle of the 5 years, in the 60-year cycle, then, you know, which zodiac sign, which house, and then you can say it'll have some difference of influence. Some may cut it, some may not, but that's not that you didn't start with some problem. I started with a problem, but, you know, this planet and this and that, it cut it, so it's not a problem. Oh, I went out on Thursday, nothing happened to me, you know. I looked both ways, no Mack trucks, you know. Okay, hey, I got across the street, you know. But it's actually there. So therefore, you wouldn't start a journey then. But as Brihaspati, it's a great day for studying and doing other things. It's just only journeys aren't started, that's all. So you want to, you have to go on Thursday, move earlier than that. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur would move out of his room into the next room and wouldn't go back in the morning. And that way then he can leave whenever he wanted. But he would still work according to that. And here's someone who didn't run his life according to astrology, though he was one of the most expert astronomers. Right? He was the astronomer or the astrologer for the king of Tripura. So he knew his stuff. Right? But then he decided, you know, the devotion is more prominent. So it's not the astrology that's the problem. It's people's approach to it. Right? Maya is Maya, no matter what it is. Just like you can connect anything to Krishna, so anything can take you to Krishna, anything can take you away from Krishna. Right? Devotees use Bhagavatam to take themselves away from Krishna. Oh, the purports are so contradictory, I don't know what to do, therefore I'll go out and buy a self-help book. So they've used transcendence to take him away from Krishna. So I'm saying, hey, anything, you can use anything. You know what I'm saying? So you don't blame that. It's what is their purpose? Why are they using it? What do they want to do with it? Who would win the Super Bowl that year? Okay, nice way of using the astrology. Okay, and so did he win the jackpot? You don't know. Well, if he had, you probably would have heard about it. So that means he wasn't a very good astrologer. I couldn't hear you. So they see how we use astronomy. That's not astronomy, that's astrology. Astronomy means where the planet is right now. That's the science, the hard science. Astrology is how do you interpret that? What does that mean? What influence does the astronomy have in your life? That's called astrology. Right? And in other words, astrology is interpretive. Astronomy is not. It's just, it's there. You can see it. You understand? So it's just one way of using it. You know, it's just like, so what's bad? The person took the knife, went crazy, and stabbed a few people. So now we should ban knives, right? Or should we just see the crazy people stay away from knives and teach people how to use them properly? Right? If everybody's crazy, ban knives. We'll use, you know, a sledgehammer to for the potatoes and cauliflowers, you know, like that, you know? Does that make sense? Or we'll boil them whole, right? You know, like that. Yeah, it works. I think, what, is it a long time ago? Someone was telling me back, I think in 72, that's how they were taught how to cook. You just throw the vegetables in whole and boil them, and then everyone gets a whole, you know, like a whole green papaya in the skin on your plate, you know, at once. Okay. It was tough in Mayapur in those days, you know. Everyone was thinking, wow, Mayapur is so difficult. You don't know what difficult was. One toilet out in the middle of that field, right? You know, in other words, where the fountain is, or a little past the fountain, that's where one toilet is. And you're over here with another 20 people, all with diarrhea. You work out the math. Right? That was, you know, you have to, hats off to anyone here at that time, you know. Is that okay?
Mm-hmm.
Vedic sound in four levels, okay? How Maha Mantra and Gayatri mantras are situated in nad. Do they work at all four levels? Okay. See, nad is the primordial sound. Right? So that primordial sound has to be Krishna. Right? So that primordial sound then has a name. It's called Krishna. Right? And that primordial sound is also then is the energy of the energetic. So that also has a name. It's called Hare. Right? Does that make sense? So that's there. It's just a matter of perception. But when it comes up through the chakras, then the action of it then is seen at the third chakra. At the fourth chakra, then you get the form of it. But the fifth chakra, then you hear the audible sound. Right? So therefore, the qualities of Krishna and then the form of Krishna, then those naturally come. It's a person with that quality has that form. Right? He's all attractive, therefore he has the form of Madan Mohan. Right? He performs all wonderful activities, therefore he's Govindaji. Right? He's the most lovable object, therefore he's Gopinath. Does that make sense? So that would be how, at least for us, it would work. Yes. Is that okay? Does that make sense? Say again? I can't hear. Heart? Hard to deal with. Heart deep? Heart deep. Okay. Yeah, but that's concentration. That's focus, isn't it? It means you only get a result if you focus. So if you're not focused, it just means you're only getting the sound. Right? Well, if you focus, only then you can get it deeper. That's what it says. Only means you can hear the fourth stage. But if you want to perceive the other three, then you have to, it's only by meditation. So therefore, if there's only some intellectual focus, you know, or devotional focus, then you can perceive the other three. Because Krishna is there, whether he's making a sound or not. Right? And if Krishna is everything, that means everything's always existing. So that means sound always was there. If sound is always there, that means the name was always there. Because that's the original sound, is the name. Yes? The path the demons take. Say again. But karma and dharma are the same. Karma is the action that you perform according to the dharma. That's why a karmi, you know, is one who follows the dharma. Right? The karmikandi is one who follows dharma. Right? And goes from dharma artha kama. The jnani is one who starts dharma moksha. Right? And the devotee is one who goes dharma moksha bhakti. Does that make sense? So the point is you won't get any result unless it's in tune with the inherent nature of something. Right? The object, in other words, the subject and the object have an inherent nature, and they have an inherent relationship. And depending upon that relationship, you can get inherent results. So according to the karma or the activity must be according to the actual nature of the subject and object. Otherwise, how do you get the result? You understand? So karma and dharma are non-different. Just one is what is the nature. Karma is what is the activities that you can perform with that nature to get what results. Right? It's a different perspective on the same thing. Yes, they become nice demons and they produce more demons. They can or can't? Yes. But they can't keep it because it's not the nature. Indra's throne, its nature is not to be ruled by a non-devotee. Right? The post of the demigods and the positions of the demigods, the influence, the facility is only meant for devotees. It's not meant for the non-devotees. So the non-devotees, even by following the Vedic process, can get themselves there, but they can't keep themselves there. Because it's not the inherent nature. But from that you can understand as even following the Vedic system in a non-devotional way, it will still get you the material results you're looking for. That's why I find it most sad is that the only thing that actually gets good results is the Vedic culture. Sustain means always looking for sustainable, you know, social and economic, you know, platforms. But the only one that can do it is the Vedic. Even if you do it in a non-devotional way, it'll still work. Of course, you have to have the qualities to make it work, and without devotional service, generally, mleches aren't known to have the qualities. That's why they're called mleches. Right? Does that make sense? Mlecha doesn't have the quality to follow the Vedas. That's why they're not. That's why they're called mleches. If they had the quality to follow the Vedas, they wouldn't be called mleches. They'd be called, you know, someone in the Varnashram system. So that's why only by chanting do we get the qualification to perform the Varnashram activities. But that doesn't make Varnashram higher because it came later. No, it just meant that it's more specific. You need more qualification. You understand? The numbers are the highest point. The number itself is the highest point. The relationship with the numbers, that's the highest points. What you do with it, then there's more and more complicated and sophisticated ways of dealing. But it's still the numbers. But modern academics turns it around because of their false ego. Because the point is you can ask those people, what are the numbers? What do they mean? What do they do? They can't give you an answer. They simply represent some concept. But those numbers have inherent nature. One means something. Yeah, it means sun, but it also means independent. It means masculine. It means it's one has that, sun has that afterwards. You know what I'm saying? So it's all connected. But that is not understood. So therefore, how do they really know what they're dealing with? It's because all they do is get some mathematical formulas. They get much more out of it. Why do you think those guys are so dry? They're terrible people. Very, very lusty people. Their material desire is so great. Because they only know the numbers only as numbers. They don't know how relationships come from the numbers. Right? They never interpret their numbers in the way of relationship. They just don't. And therefore, much of the time, their relationships don't go very good. And now you can say, some of, well, Einstein was okay, but he was religious. So he got it from there. He didn't get it from his numbers. You know what I'm saying? So that's the point, is they're dealing with it, they're becoming very proficient in it, but they're not actually seeing what's there. So what they could get, so they're not that smart. Part of the mechanics. Yeah. If you hit what? If you hit a professor. Yeah, might. I would expect it depends on what professor you hit, you know, what sound you get. You know, but yeah. You got a problem with that? Okay. Just checking. The quickest way. Okay, yeah, 60,000 years and that. How long did that sacrifice take? No, but how long did the sacrifice take? You're talking about it as if the sacrifice started with the Purnahuti. What about when they go out and look for the field? Then they plow the field. Then they do the preliminary yajnas to start the yajna. Then the priest and his wife start making by hand the 10,000 bricks that are required to make the yajna kunda. And then assembling the first layer with all the proper times and all that, with all the proper sacrifices at the proper titis, then waiting. Then the next layer, then the next layer until you have all five layers done. Right? Then at the auspicious time, starting the yajna. And then taking whatever, however, you know, a year or whatever it takes to complete it. What about all that? What about that? Who you can just go out and plow a field and do a big, you know, ashrameda yajna or something? How much you had to work to get a kingdom that you could send a horse out? And therefore, you're qualified to do that yajna. It's not the piety. We're just, right now, we're only talking on time. Because you're making it sound like, I chant forever, you know, like that, and then, you know, and it doesn't happen. But this king just did a sacrifice in the Purnahuti, here comes the Lord. But, you know, and then how did he become a king? Right? By his brahmachari training in the ashram. Right? Then how did that happen? By proper parents that could give birth to a potential king. Right? Right? And how did those guys, how did that work then? How did those parents have the qualities by which they could get a son that would be an emperor? Because of their birth and their training. Does that make sense? And even the Lord comes out of the fire, does that mean you're going to surrender to Him and go back to Godhead? Did you hear any of them going doing that? Name the sacrifice where the Lord came out of the fire, and they go, finally you came, can I go with you? What did they ask? Dunam, Janam, Sundarim. You know. Right? Then? Yes. All right. Hariva! Hariva! Yes. It's not brought from the right sources. It means it'll get you the benefit. Okay, you hear it? It means, in other words, Grihastha gives money and charity to others that are doing nice work. They get the same benefit as the person doing the work. But what if the work, the money is gotten by improper means? Okay. So the point is the results will come the same. But the money carries with it something not so good. You know, in other words, you get both. You know, does that make sense? You know, the knife still cuts, but you also get an infection. You understand? Like that. So that's why then people are very careful who they take money from. Like Prabhupada, if he knew the money was not good money, he wouldn't put it into his account. That then he would distribute and all that. He would directly just give it to the deities. Does that make sense? Because once it's been given, then it's purified. But it's just who it's given to the first time, they get the reaction. So that's why one has to be qualified to give in charity. It's not that anybody just takes some money. A qualified person doesn't necessarily take money from anyone. Or even if they take it, they won't use it, they'll give it away. Right? That's why in the tradition, Brahmins don't beg from the king. Because the king takes on 1/6 of the karma of the country. So you don't want to take the king's money. Because that's how does he get rid of that 1/6? By giving in charity to the Brahmins. So therefore, it's not a first option for a Brahmin to go to a king. It's last option. Like that. But the point is okay. So how to please Krishna if means direct things that are directly done for Krishna the most pleasing. So how does the Grihastha therefore engage in things that are pleasing to Krishna when they have so many other activities they need to be done, so many other duties? The directness to Krishna is a mentality. See, is that you have different forms of activity. Some are naturally devotional. Some can be or not, depending upon one's mentality. You know what I'm saying? Means worshiping the deity is a devotional activity. Taking a bath is a neutral activity. You could be taking a bath because you're going to go see the deities, or you could be taking a bath because you're going to go out on some social program. Right? Both of them make you clean, so that's an improvement. But the point is it's what you're doing for. So if you're taking the bath to please Krishna because you're going to worship, therefore then taking the bath also gives spiritual benefit. Right? Because it's in support of. Does that make sense? Like that. So therefore, in the beginning, means one always tries to keep oneself in contact with the maximum amount of direct devotional activities. And where one can't, then those indirect ones, then you try to connect them to Krishna, either by giving the result to Krishna, or, I mean, that should always, of course, that should be done, giving the result. Then finer than that, then is your mentality in giving the result. Was the result given first before, or was the result given after? You know, in other words, was it your result, then you gave it, or it was always Krishna's result, and you're simply working for him? Why is it that you want that result or want to give that result to Krishna? What is it about that activity that, you know, inspires you? So the connection of that to Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah, so there's many options of what to do. So you engage yourself in as much as the direct that works, and then everything else you try to, the indirect, you try to connect it to Krishna by some process. Right? And ultimately you're trying to get it that you're doing it to please Krishna. Okay? Yeah. Okay. I was asking if we would like to make a comment on Prabhupada's statement that all women should be married and all men should remain brahmacharis. In other words, each of those positions is the best for that category. Because the man, how do you say, the minimum that they involve themselves in dealing with the material energy, the minimal distraction is there. And so then their focus will be better, and that focus then will get them the best results. And by not engaging in the activity, it means in so many activities, they generally have, they can go deeper in the thought of each one and seeing its connection to Krishna. Also, if one's not involved in family life, basically you can make practically most of your day direct activities like that. So then that would be the best. So a man at least has to start life like that and should end life like that. And in the middle, if there's no need for anything else other than that, in other words, it's completely progressive, then he would remain like that. But otherwise, they start as a brahmachari, they end as one. For the women, So now this goes back to the original masculine-feminine principle, right? So Krishna is a masculine principle. His creation is the feminine principle. So then, he is independent, so therefore he can function on his own. But we're not dealing with rasa here. We're just dealing with atmarama. We're dealing with the tattva. So it works. So then the man will deal with atmarama aspect to take himself out of material rasa to then be able to situate himself in spiritual rasa. In other words, he has to pull himself from one, out of one, then plug himself into the other. So you have that moment in between when he's not in either. Right? So that's the Atmarama platform. That's your position of the brahmachari does that make sense? Or the sannyas, is that they are pulling themselves out of the one to put themselves into the other. So they can do that because of the independent nature. So it's a reflection. Krishna's masculine, so he's independent. Then here, the masculine form here then reflects that same quality. Though, of course, it's a jiva, they're never independent. But the duties, the austerity is. In other words, the form of it is masculine, though the living entity doing it is not. You know what I'm saying? Just like, let's say, you're not a driver, but you have to drive the car, but you'll still do it in the same way and follow the same rules as someone who is a driver. You know, as soon as you get to the place, you get out and go, glad that's over, right? You know, but you still have to sit in the car behind the wheel, turn it on, push the right pedals, and turn the steering wheel in the same way. So even though the jiva is not masculine, still the position functions in that way. So they have to follow the rules of that. It's just Krishna's pastime. That's how he's made the material creation. It's a reflection of the spiritual. So it's still his pastime. So that the universal form expands into all these, so they still follow the same rules. Though the living entity in it may be conditioned and so therefore is not God-conscious, or may be God-conscious and performs the activities how they would perform him in the spiritual world. But the form will look the same. You know, just like Sridham and Sudham still are energy. So technically you could say they're feminine, but they're taking the masculine role. So they follow the masculine rules, and therefore there's the masculine experience. So therefore then Krishna, the coward boys, they can wrestle and this and that. So then, is that okay? So then the feminine being in that position, being dependent, it has the dependency upon the interaction with the masculine to get to deal with everything. In other words, the man, if he can reduce it and not deal with everything, better. But if he has to, if he can't do that, then he has to deal with the senses. That means then he has to connect himself with a woman. Because there in that, because the woman is the field of the senses. Right? She is the form of the material energy. Right? She is energy. In other words, the field of activities is the feminine nature. Does that make sense? Right? Krishna is performing his activities in the Dham, which is feminine, is being arranged by Yoga Maya. The pleasure he gets from that is coming from, his interaction with his energy. Does that make sense? In other words, rasa comes in connection with energy. So therefore, the man has to connect himself with a wife. That's why it mentions here, with a grihastha, with wife. Then he is in contact, then that rasa can be dealt with. So then it's a matter of, by intellect, by sadhana, we weren't able to purify or give up the needs for these particular engagements. So now we'll engage in those engagements according to the rules of the shastra. And so therefore we get the results that the shastra gives. And that will be, as we said here, the varnashram is to free oneself for liberation from the material existence. So properly perform duties in connection with Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra for any of the four varnas or ashrams will liberate you. Right? So therefore, Grihastha gives the broadest range of desires you can deal with. Because Grihastha then deals with all the occupations of the four varnas. While brahmachari, vanapras, sannyas only deal with Brahman. It doesn't deal with kshatriya, vaishya, shudra. Right? It's limited. It doesn't deal with all the broadness that the grihastha ashram affords. So then, for the women, it's the natural place to be situated is in there where they're connected because all facility is there. So that means the senses can be engaged in a variety of ways. The feminine nature needs variety. And so the maximum can be gained from that situation. Because even if you say, well, the woman could create her own environment, she can go out, get the money, get the facility. The emotional environment, she can't generate on her own. Right? Like that. That she can't do. That you have to have other people in the house. So that's why it's always recommended that a woman is connected with some man, either a father, a husband, or a son, like that. Or ultimately, of course, Krishna, because he's male, so it'll still work. You know what I'm saying? But that's generally more rare to do. That's, of course, the best, because as the gopis mentioned, you know, Rukmini and the other the wives of Krishna and Dwarkas, like, what woman would settle for a man, you know, made out of, you know, stool, urine, pus, blood, mucus, bile, you know, it's like, just as, you know, it goes the other way, all the women, now it's just mucus, bile, it's like, it goes the other way also, it goes both ways, it's not that the men are something special and the women are just, you know, stool, urine, and like that, it's both are, you know, but that's where you match them, you know, this very well, this particular bag with all the stool in the right places, then you match with this bag of stool that's got all the stool in all the right places, like that. You know, it's just like, does that make sense? So in that way, then, it's the natural position, like that. But the point is it's the ideal, but it's not necessarily, but the point is to get to there, right? So then, through the man's training, then he gets himself to the point where he can function comfortably without woman. But that doesn't mean that he's not functioning with, he's not interacting with them. It means he doesn't need to. Right? But the Vedic concept of not needing to means if it's your, but the duties are performed and you interact appropriate for the nature of what you're dealing with. Does that make sense? Therefore, Narad Muni, he's a brahmachari. He has no need to interact with women. But you see, whenever he does deal with women, he deals with them very nicely. Right? Because women don't like to be dealt with roughly. No one likes to be. So therefore, following that thing, he deals very nicely. Though he has no need to deal with them, but he can deal with them. Right? It's just like Prahlad Maharaj's mother, right, was taken care of during her time of went pregnancy by Narad Muni in his ashram. He has no need to keep pregnant women in his ashram. Right? But he can do it. And it wasn't that when she came home after, you know, Prahlad was born and all that, that you never hear in the Bhagavatam or anywhere where she says, wow, glad that was over, you know, that was rough, you know, living with those brahmacharis, that was crazy, you know. No, she never says. Right? And you never hear Hiranyakashipu saying, you know, he's going to get Narad Muni for how he dealt with his wife. So in other words, he has no need, but he dealt perfectly. So that's probably a major Vedic principle that is overlooked. The idea is, if I don't need, so therefore, that's the whole idea. In other words, the ideal is a madhyama can deliver you. That's what it's talking about. But the point is the madhyama still has a conditioned nature. Depending on what it is, they have material needs to work out or not. So if they don't, then they don't need to get married. But there's still an inspiration. One can get inspiration by, you know, seeing their example and the benefits of their devotional service. You can give in charity to them. You can hear their instructions. So you still get benefit from them. But the ones that still have the desires that need to be taken care of, but they will take care of them according to Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. So their interaction with the wife won't be exploitive. Right? It'll be progressive. Not that there won't be ups and downs. It's just the way it is. You know, that's part of the variety. You know, it just happens. But they'll be able to get through it. And by that, it'll actually make them stronger. Right? So they will advance. And as they advance, they'll actually perform their duties better. The more attached someone is, generally the less good they do, unless they're so attached and so materialistic, but have complete faith that the Shastra, by following, I'm going to get it. They'll do the duty well, though the quality or the mood of it may not be so ideal. That's why someone who is so attached in that way, generally then they go after the society girls, because then the desires are taken care of and they do all the right things, but the quality of emotion is not actually there. But the girl gets her what she needs from it in the way of hard cash. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So then at least she can take care of everything she needs. Does that make sense? But the quality of it isn't considered that great. And if she ever meets someone who the quality of it is good, generally you see they'll leave the profession and marry the person. right? But, you know, it's rare you're going to find that border where someone of that caliber somehow or another is dealing with them like that. So generally there's a difference. So they'll deal nicely, properly with the wife, and they will see everything in connection to the process of freeing themselves from material entanglement. In other words, it wasn't just an experience that had some influence on their progress in devotional life. You know, as it means. And one of the first examples will be coming up is Kardama and Devahuti. Here is someone who his only purpose was to go back to Godhead, but he saw he had more material desire than would afford him as a brahmachari to do that. Therefore, he went to the Lord and prayed to him that this will happen. So, therefore, qualified wife. Then he was able to perform all his activities. It's not that they, you know, like that. They had 10 kids. And then, but as soon as, and it's not that he wasn't realized earlier, but he waited until his son took responsibility for the mother. Then he left. I think it was the next verse. Right? He's gone. So then there's that principle. You know, in other words, the point is brahmachari, but in between, he may not be, but that purpose is to get to that platform. So that's why then it says that then living with the wife, then that's very, very important. So because that will come from the wife, the husband is very grateful for that, and therefore would never do anything to displease her. Right? In other words, she is the door to liberation for him. So why would you deal improperly with that? Right? You know what I'm saying? And even if you said, well, it's just, you know, a servant or just sense gratification, but if it's yours, why would you deal badly with it? You know, you don't go out and, you know, kick your Ferrari and make dents in the hood, you know? You take care of it. You polish it. You take it and get it, you know, cleaned. And, you know? So, however you look at it, women shouldn't be dealt with improperly. Right? Even for the materialists. Right? Like you see Hiranyakashipu, when he was dealing with the women in his family over the death of his brother, he dealt very sweetly, nicely, even spiritually. You know, he was saying all nice philosophy and dealing just perfectly how you would, you know, console the women of the family. You know, and here's number one big demon of the universe who, you know, any demigod says anything, you know, just raising his eyebrows, you know, they're running in terror. But he's coming in and speaking very nicely with his ladies. Right? And so if the biggest demon in the universe can do it, why can't everybody else, you know? Right? So, therefore, it's just a matter of how you identify what that means. So it means the Madhyama. You know? That's at best. Then you start down from there. I mean, if you can get yourself an Uttama, hey, great. But if those aren't, you know, around, then the Madhyamas. So the Madhyamas can be trained. The Brahmacharis can be trained like that. So then it's just a matter of, depending upon their background, the individual, you can get them as far as you can. But as time goes, hopefully this problem will be reduced. You know, over the generations. As it's seen the importance of the brahmachari ashram, that the time and energy is put into it, then you can get better and better quality of students out. So therefore, then the family life will go better. They'll produce better children, which will then produce better brahmacharis. You know, like that. And basically, if the women feel secure like that, then they'll do nicely as grihasthas. That's the main thing. If the women are protected, then they can be satisfied like that. But if they're not protected, they can't feel satisfied. So then you are going to have the problem of girls who've grown up in an unprotected environment being insecure. So even if they have a good situation, it may take them a while to figure it out. Or if they have someone who's not top grade, that they can handle them not responding in the ideal way, just because of their fears and that they can't, then they're going to blow up now and again, and it's going to make it uncomfortable. But hopefully, if they're trained enough, they'll get it together, and eventually it'll start to work more smoothly. like that. But a very well-trained boy, even with a girl who's not so, it'll work. But it may take many years before she adjusts with it. But now if she's grown up in a protected environment and you put together a boy who's grown up properly as a brahmachari, that combination here, you know, a faithful wife and spiritually trained brahmachari, a good combination for advancement of the human mission. Then you get something very solid, something very dynamic. So that's why both have to be done. But unfortunately, the modern culture does not see the reason for it. You know, they somehow or another think leaving the girls out on their own means, in other words, you leave them out on your own, though you say you're not. And then when they get in trouble, oh, it's all their fault. Right? Boys and girls get into trouble. But somehow it's always their fault. Their parents, the community, nobody's at fault. Oh, well, they didn't have to do that. Oh, I'm saying like, well, here's a starving person, you put some food in front of him, but it wasn't a codicy food, and it was a codicy, and he did eat it. You know, he didn't have to eat it, he could have fasted, it was a codicy. Very nice Kanista Adhikari statement. You know, that statement simply proves your neophyteness. That's all it does. So that's what I'm always amazed at. We run a community as if it was, you know, downtown Los Angeles, and then the boys and girls get in trouble, and then they're at fault. Or the schools are at fault. Parents are never at fault. I don't know how they get away with it. They're just pristine, clean, squeaky. You know, parents are never wrong. Unless, of course, the community doesn't like them, then they take them and turf them out. But other than that, you know, if you're your friend, well, you know, it was the kids, or someone else, it was the school, it was the community, it was everybody else does it, what can we do? Right? You know what I'm saying? It means this area here, it's a pretty big area. There's probably hundreds of thousands of people living here, and there's maybe 1,000 of us. So if we take the formula, like how the devotees take, where we're living in the West, practically all those hundreds of thousands eat fish. So how are the devotees keeping themselves from eating fish? Everybody's doing it. You know what I'm saying? How do they do it? How do they do it? Why do they mean it? Why aren't they trying to fit in? You know, devotees don't even know the different kinds of fish that there are, you know, in different seasons and what you can do with them and, you know? But somehow or another, we're living in the West. Oh, you have to fit in. Right? Here they all wear, you know, checkered lungis. I don't see the devotees. Well, we got to fit in, you know? So I got a little beard here and a checkered lungi, you know? No. They're fitting into a place 12,000 miles away and then claiming, I'm just being practical. You know what I'm saying? If you were on the North Pole and you were wearing a bear skin, I could understand it. But, you know, if you're sitting there in the Bahamas and wearing the bear skin and saying, well, I'm just being practical, you know, it lasts a long time, you know, hey, you know, you don't have to wash it so often, hey, you know. You know, it just doesn't make sense. So the whole point is that until we see the value of boys being trained properly and girls being trained properly, then it's simply going to be a mess and there's not going to be anything available. That's it. And girls are just going to have to put up with, you know, it works. It's anatomically correct. You know, that's as good as it gets. You know, that's it. You know? Yeah, well, he did have some hair on his chest before he waxed it. Yeah, you know, so, I mean, that's about it. You know, it's like this, you know. Unless, of course, you like a waxed chest, then hey, you know, things like that. I think Matt Damon has a waxed chest. Brad Pitt? I'm not sure. Is that okay? So, basically, until the society feels it's important, it's not really going to happen. Because people are having more and more kids, and if they're not training them, you just have more and more bad examples and more frustrated kids who then just have to pick, you know, oh, that one's cute, he gels his hair, you know. Yeah, well, you got that one, I'll take the one, at least he combs his hair, you know. And like, you know, like that, you know, so it's... Is that okay? Is that dealt with everything? Okay. Complete package. Then you got the Beauty and the Beast program. But you have to remember, is the Beast was, you know, some kind of, what do you call it? Nobility. He did have a castle with all facilities in it, and right? He wasn't, you know, living in some slum somewhere, right? So that means there is something to work with. In other words, if a man's not, is there something to work with? And do you have the tolerance and patience to work with it long enough? You know what I'm saying? Because, see, the man's nature, the audaciousness makes them, gives them the drive, right? Because they're supposed to leave. So they can always drive. They can always be pushing in the front. So that means they can put up with something for a long time until they get it, you know? But a woman, they're passive by nature, so for them to be active to get something like that can only be for a temporary amount of time. So you have to judge yourself, how long are you willing to put up? So the man's untrained, if you're talking years, then it may work. If you're talking months, don't bother. You know what I'm saying? Because it's not going to happen. An untrained person is not going to be corrected by your good behavior in that. In months. And not only that, you're going to have to do the thing that ladies don't like to do, is you're going to have to tell him what he has to do and why, rather than have him figure it out. Right? Because if he figures it out, means you're important. Right? He's gone to the trouble to figure out what you want and how you want it, because you're special to him, therefore he's going to make that endeavor. And if you have to tell him, then that means he doesn't care so much. Right? Okay, you're going to have to drop that until he cares. So that means you're going to have to tell him, you have to do like this because of this, and if you don't, this is what's going to happen. Right? And then make it happen so he understands what it means when you put on the emotional corkscrews. Thumbs, or the heart screws, right? You know, you've heard of thumb screws. Well, these are heart screws. You know, they know how to, like that. Very painful. More painful than thumb screws, let me tell you. Right? Does that make sense? So that means if you want to make it work, you've got to drop a lot of things that are inherently natural to a woman. In other words, you have to take the masculine role and bring this lady into line. Unfortunately, this lady thinks she's senior to you. Right? That's the problem. So in other words, if you go into a scenario where you have an older woman that's really puffed up and really think they're special and have a really big attitude, and you want to bring that woman under control, that's what you have to do. So if you're willing to do that, then you'll get somewhere. And if you're not, then you have to look at what's your alternative. Well, this one's rotten on this side, and this one's rotten on that side, and this one's rotten on the top, but this one's rotten on the bottom, so like that. And but this one's rotten on both sides, you know. It's really, really happening here, this rotten tomato, you know. So, you know what I'm saying? You're going to have to... That's the point, is there's not much use in dealing with the alternatives. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Yeah, so it's just... The strain? Training. What is this training? Oh, okay. What is the train? It's how you hold it, you know. It's like, it's all in the wrist, you know. It's all the time. Training. And the first principle of training is respect. Respect is not there. So respect means you're talking about it from the inverse. Are you talking about it in its natural form? It means how to train the brahmachari or how to work with, you know, how you say, inferior, what do you call it, goods? Oh, okay, okay. We'll keep it like that. But we'll explain it for the other, okay. So in training the brahmachari, it's respect. So that comes because the teacher has respect. Right? Teacher has respect for their teacher, has respect for the student as a student, respect for everything in the creation. So respect is the basic principle. Then you have knowledge. That knowledge has to be based on the Shastra. So you act according to Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. Then you have, how you say, humility has to be generated. So that's generated by menial service. Like that, service generates humility. Because without humility, how are you actually going to be practically respectful in all places? And relationship will only be expressed through service, right? Then you need cleanliness. Without cleanliness, there won't be the proper standard for the interaction, for your service, for your knowledge, right? And then you have to have sense control. Without that, you won't have the strength to actually focus and get any of these other things done. Does that make sense? So that's what you're working at. You know, in other words, you can't just pick up the socks. You have to let it be known why socks have to go where they're supposed to go. What's the reason? You know what I'm saying? The saffron cloth. What does the saffron cloth do? It's not cheating. I mean, I wouldn't put it into cheating, because then cheating means then you're finding someone at the fault, you're the victim. And so then you can happily sit there and in a depressed state, feeling that you've been cheated, and generate some inspiration from that, some taste from that. It's not a matter of that, it's a matter of you don't know, that's all they can do. You know what I'm saying? Someone who doesn't know how to cook, you can't blame them if what they cooked didn't come out nice, because they just don't know. But someone who's trained and then they don't cook properly, that you can say something about. The point is the reason that brahmacharis aren't trained because people don't know how to train them. They don't know what a brahmachari is. Right? Because before, if they're tough, rough, you know, chew on, you know, chunks of wood for breakfast, you know, spit at the women, then you're a brahmachari. But that's got nothing to do with brahmacharya. So non-brahmacharis decided that that was brahmacharya, and it became very popular because it matches with the boys down at the pub and what they think are men. It's the same mentality. So therefore it worked well, seemingly. Then now give it, you know, 20, 30 years, it didn't work at all. And then the problem is then because it was labeled that it was Vedic, right? In other words, the men picked out of the Vedic what they liked, you know, to control women, but didn't take the other parts on how they are to act. So, in other words, men control the women, but how do they control the women? It's by their behavior the woman is controlled. Like that. That they missed. The woman is so impressed with your behavior, therefore she's controlled. You did something nice, therefore she serves. You control your senses, you're sensitive, therefore she's loyal. That the men didn't catch, that's the other side of those same points that they use and roll up into a big club and smash the women over the head with. What they didn't understand is their responsibility in that is greater. The woman simply, her responsibility, she's willing to go along for the ride. But the ride is his. You know, it's his 57 Chevy, it's not hers. You know. like that. He's driving the car. But then he wants to say, well, she's a bad passenger. We went off the road because she was a bad passenger, you know. You know, but unfortunately, that's the way it is. Very, very popular. You got, 3 billion men on the planet. And I would say quite a few billion think like this. If they're Asian, African from Africa, South American, parts of Europe, more east, less west, then they'll think less like this. But to some degree, they'll have something. They'll take care of their women, but they'll be very aggressive with them, or they'll take care, but they'll be a little too weak, or, you know, different things. They don't get the balance right. Some do, some don't, but it's more workable. But somehow or another, you cross, you know, into the West, something goes haywire there. I don't know what goes wrong. Absolutely. I was talking to one Indian gentleman about this concept of the couch potato. How the man thinks, you know, I did my job, and now I'm at home, and now it's my time. He couldn't understand what idiot would ever have such a concept. It just didn't, you know, would be saying like, you know, yeah, you know, after lunch I go and jump off the roof, you know, or something like that. You know, it's like, you know, it's just like, who would ever do that? His concept that who would ever think that you would keep a wife and not interact with her? Your job is to get the facilities so you can interact. Why wouldn't he interact? Why would he sit on the couch and think, you know, that's perfection? It was a foreign concept. You know, it's like talking about, you know, people with two heads or something. It didn't relate. You know, like that. So there are people where the cultures where they are active, and you see, because of that, therefore their families are successful. And where families aren't successful is because basically the man doesn't know what he's doing. Every woman, no matter how bad she is looking for Mr. Right. And as soon as she gets Mr. Right, she's willing to be Mrs. Right. Right? Right? But if he's not Mr. Right, then I don't know, how does that work? Because then they have to go, they can go fly their own plane or something, but if he's not right, how is he flying the plane? I'm not sure. How does that work, you know? Okay, it wasn't with the wife, it was his brother. Okay. Does that make sense? Like that? But unfortunately, this is not really understood. It's not popular. Or the men will hear these things and they'll relate it to one incident or another incident. They'll use it there. They get the result, think this is very good, and then sit back. Okay, then couch potato again. I did it. Yeah, I know what I'm doing. And then they don't understand that there's no two situations where a woman will ever respond the same. A woman never responds the same ever again. Everything changes. You may get the same response, but it'll be a different situation. But they expect, you know, I did it, and so now it's like that. Every time they go, oh, how do you like the sari? Then I just say, great, honey. And then when she says, well, what do you like about it? Then it's like, well, she's harassing me, you know. What's going on? Why can't she? I said I liked it, you know. Why does she have to harass? You know, it's like, you know, okay, sorry. Like that, you know. Why don't you get a mannequin, right? Dress it up once, one sari. Hey, you only have to buy one sari, you know, like that. Or it depends, you know. Who you are, you don't have to buy a sari. Hey, you know. So it's just, you know. You know what I'm saying? But it's just, it doesn't make sense. The ego is so big. That's why brahmacharya is so important, is that you reduce the ego down to something workable. Because there is no place in Shastra where it ever says that you reduce down the woman's ego to something usable. It doesn't say that. Right? In the Shastra, when it talks about reducing the ego, what gender does it use? Male, right? This is also one of the things that women's liberation. Why does it always say he? Because it's he's supposed to do it. That's why. You know, if he does it, she will do it. But that's the point. Brahmacharya reduces it down to where it's workable. Then you can actually apply the knowledge. And then getting that, you get the faith, and then it progresses, it moves forward. But when the ego is too big, you can't explain what I'm explaining to married men. You just can't. In fact, it's very rare I can ever find a married man where when he comes and he says, you know, I'm having this problem, that problem, that I can actually talk about the actual problem as him. Because when he comes, it's always the wife this, wife that, wife this, wife that. Okay, maybe I could do this, but the wife this, wife that, you know, like that. There's no opening. There's no door. There's not even a keyhole. Nothing. That you can say, well, maybe it's you. Very rare. A few men, okay, what did I do wrong? Then you can explain, no, but this, that, and then, you know, they may accept, they may not. Very few can just say, hey, you did this wrong. They go, oh, okay. Can't. Properly trained brahmacharis? Yes. Not? No chance. Only when they've been completely devastated, destroyed, then at that time, you can say something, but as soon as then they get back up, that's it. Door closes. Like that. It's weird. That's why brahmacharya is so important. You don't have to train the women as brahmacharis because they're already sensitive. They're already tuned into these things. They won't be satisfied. And because of that, they'll look everywhere for it. This man, that man, this one, like that. That's their weakness. You know? But if a woman understands the principle, she's trying to protect herself, trying to be satisfied, then a properly trained man can protect her, can make her satisfied. But if the man's not trained, there's no question it'll happen. Okay. I think we should end here. It's getting a little long. Like that. You know. The windows are closed, you know, and we don't want anyone to die of the heat, you know, from the hot air. Okay. Jai. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivrinda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi. So therefore, that's the whole idea. In other words, the ideal is a madhyama can deliver you. That's what it's talking about. But the point is the madhyama still has a conditioned nature. Depending on what it is, they have material needs to work out or not. So if they don't, then they don't need to get married. But they're still an inspiration. One can get inspiration by, you know, seeing their example and the benefits of their devotional service. You can give in charity to them. You can hear their instructions. So you still get benefit from them. But the ones that still have the desires that need to be taken care of, but they will take care of them according to Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. So their interaction with the wife won't be exploitive. Right? It'll be progressive. Not that there won't be ups and downs, it's just the way it is. You know, that's part of the variety. You know, it just happens. But they'll be able to get through it. And by that, it'll actually make them stronger. Right? So they will advance. And as they advance, they'll actually perform their duties better. The more attached someone is, generally the less good they do, unless they're so attached and so materialistic, but have complete faith that the Shastra, by following, I'm going to get it. They'll do the duty well, though the quality or the mood of it may not be so ideal. That's why someone who is so attached in that way, generally then they go after the society girls, because then the desires are taken care of and they do all the right things, but the quality of emotion is not actually there. But the girl gets her how you say it, what she needs from it in the way of hard cash. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So then at least she can take care of everything she needs. Does that make sense? But the quality of it isn't considered that great. And if she ever meets someone who the quality of it is good, generally you see they'll leave the profession and marry the person. Right? But, you know, it's rare you're going to find that border where someone of that caliber somehow or another is dealing with them like that. So generally there's a difference. So they'll deal nicely, properly with the wife, and they will see everything in connection to the process of freeing themselves from material entanglement. In other words, it wasn't just an experience that had some influence on their progress in devotional life. You know, and one of the first examples will be coming up is Kardama and Devahuti. Here is someone who his only purpose was to go back to Godhead. But he saw he had more material desire than would afford him as a brahmachari to do that. Therefore, he went to the Lord and prayed to him that this will happen. So, therefore, qualified wife. Then he was able to perform all his activities. It's not that they, you know, like that. They had 10 kids. And then, but as soon as, and it's not that he wasn't realized earlier, but he waited until his son took responsibility for the mother. Then he left. I think it was the next verse. Right, he's gone. So then there's that principle, you know. In other words, the point is brahmachari, but in between he may not be, but that purpose is to get to that platform. So that's why then it says that then living with the wife, then that's very, very important. So because that will come from the wife, the husband is very grateful for that and therefore would never do anything to displease her. Right? In other words, she is the door to liberation for him. So why would you deal improperly with that? Right? You know what I'm saying? And even if you said, well, it's just, you know, a servant or just sense gratification, but if it's yours, why would you deal badly with it? You know, you don't go out and, you know, kick your Ferrari and make dents in the hood, you know? You take care of it. You polish it. You take it and get it, you know, cleaned. And, you know? So, however you look at it, women shouldn't be dealt with improperly. Right? Even for the materialists. Right? Like you see Hiranyakashipu, when he was dealing with the women in his family over the death of his brother, he dealt very sweetly, nicely, even spiritually. You know, he was saying all nice philosophy and dealing just perfectly how you would, you know, console the women of the family. You know, and here's number one big demon of the universe who, you know, any demigod says anything, you know, just raising his eyebrows, you know, they're running in terror. But he's coming in and speaking very nicely with his ladies. Right? And so if the biggest demon in the universe can do it, why can't everybody else? You know? Right? So therefore, it's just a matter of how you identify what that means. So it means the madhyama. You know, that's at best. Then you start down from there. I mean, if you can get yourself an uttama, hey, great. But if those aren't, you know, around, then the madhyamas. So the madhyamas can be trained. The brahmacharis can be trained like that. Like that. So then it's just a matter of, depending upon their background, the individual, you can get them as far as you can. But as time goes, hopefully this problem will be reduced, you know, over the generations. As it's seen the importance of the brahmachari ashram, that the time and energy is put into it, then you can get better and better quality of students out. So therefore, then the family life will go better. They'll produce better children, which will then produce better brahmacharis. You know, like that. And basically, if the women feel secure like that, then they'll do nicely as grihasthas. That's the main thing. If the women are protected, then they can be satisfied like that. But if they're not protected, they can't feel satisfied. So then you are going to have the problem of girls who've grown up in an unprotected environment being insecure. So even if they have a good situation, it may take them a while to figure it out. Or if they have someone who's not top grade that they can handle them not responding in the ideal way, just because of their fears and that they can't, then they're going to blow up now and again, and it's going to make it uncomfortable. But hopefully, if they're trained enough, they'll get it together and eventually it'll start to work more smoothly. Like that. But a very well-trained boy, even with a girl who's not so, it'll work. But it may take many years before she adjusts with it. But now, if she's grown up in a protected environment and you put together a boy who's grown up properly as a brahmachari, that combination here, you know, a faithful wife and spiritually trained brahmachari, a good combination for advancement of the human mission. Then you get something very solid, something very dynamic. So that's why both have to be done. But unfortunately, the modern culture does not see the reason for it. You know, they somehow or another think leaving the girls out on their own means, in other words, you leave them out on your own, though you say you're not. And then when they get in trouble, oh, it's all their fault. Right? Boys and girls get into trouble. But somehow it's always their fault. Their parents, the community, nobody's at fault. Oh, well, they didn't have to do that. Oh, they're saying like, well, here's a starving person, you put some food in front of him, but it wasn't a codicy food, and it was a codicy, and he did eat it. You know, he didn't have to eat it. He could have fasted. It was a codicy. Very nice Kanista Adhikari statement. You know, that statement simply proves your neophyteness. That's all it does. So that's what I'm always amazed at. We run a community as if it was, you know, downtown Los Angeles, and then the boys and girls get in trouble, and then they're at fault. Or the schools are at fault. Parents are never at fault. I don't know how they get away with it. They're just pristine, clean, squeaky. You know, parents are never wrong. Unless, of course, the community doesn't like them, then they take them and turf them out. But other than that, you know, if you're your friend, well, you know, it was the kids, or someone else, it was the school, it was the community, it was everybody else does it, what can we do? Right? You know what I'm saying? It means this area here, it's a pretty big area. There's probably hundreds of thousands of people living here, and there's maybe 1,000 of us. So if we take the formula, like how the devotees take, we're living in the West, practically all those hundreds of thousands eat fish. So how are the devotees keeping themselves from eating fish? Everybody's doing it. You know what I'm saying? How do they do it? How do they do it? Why aren't they trying to fit in? You know, devotees don't even know the different kinds of fish that there are, you know, in different seasons and what you can do with them and, you know? But somehow or another, we're living in the West. Oh, you have to fit in. Right? Here they all wear, you know, checkered lungis. I don't see the devotees. Well, we got to fit in, you know? So I got a little beard here and a checkered lungi, you know? No. The fitting into a place 12,000 miles away and then claiming, I'm just being practical. You know what I'm saying? If you were on the North Pole and you were wearing a bear skin, I could understand it. But, you know, if you're sitting there in the Bahamas and wearing the bear skin and saying, well, I'm just being practical, you know, it lasts a long time, you know, hey, you know, you don't have to wash it so often, hey, you know. You know, it doesn't make sense. It just doesn't make sense. So the whole point is, you know, straight from the thing is that until we see the value of boys being trained properly and girls being trained properly, then it's simply going to be a mess and there's not going to be anything available. That's it. And girls are just going to have to put up with, you know, it works. It's anatomically correct. You know, that's as good as it gets. You know, that's it. You know? Yeah, well, he did have some hair on his chest before he waxed it. Yeah, you know, so, I mean, that's about it. You know, it's like this, you know. Unless, of course, you like a waxed chest, then hey, you know, things like that. I think Matt Damon has a waxed chest. Brad Pitt? I'm not sure. Is that okay? So, basically, until the society feels it's important, it's not really going to happen. Because people are having more and more kids, and if they're not training them, you just have more and more bad examples and more frustrated kids who then just have to pick, you know, well, that one's cute, he gels his hair, you know. Yeah, well, you got that one. I'll take the one. At least he combs his hair, you know? Like that. You know, so that's... Is that okay? Is that dealt with everything? Okay. Complete package. Then you got the Beauty and the Beast program. But you have to remember is the Beast was, you know, some kind of, nobility. He did have a castle with all facilities in it, and right? He wasn't, you know, living in some slum somewhere, right? So that means there is something to work with. In other words, if a man's not, is there something to work with? And do you have the tolerance and patience to work with it long enough? You know what I'm saying? Because, see, the man's nature, the audaciousness makes them, gives them the drive, right? Because they're supposed to leave. So they can always drive. They can always be pushing in the front. So that means they can put up with something for a long time until they get it, you know? But a woman, they're passive by nature, so for them to be active to get something like that can only be for a temporary amount of time. So you have to judge yourself, how long are you willing to put up? So the man's untrained, if you're talking years, then it may work. If you're talking months, don't bother. You know what I'm saying? Because it's not going to happen. An untrained person is not going to be corrected by your good behavior in that. In months. And not only that, you're going to have to do the thing that ladies don't like to do, is you're going to have to tell him what he has to do and why, rather than have him figure it out. Right? Because if he figures it out, means you're important. Right? He's gone to the trouble to figure out what you want and how you want it because you're special to him, therefore he's going to make that endeavor. And if you have to tell him, then that means he doesn't care so much. Right? Okay, you're going to have to drop that until he cares. So that means you're going to have to tell him, you have to do like this because of this, and if you don't, this is what's going to happen. Right? And then, make it happen so he understands what it means when you put on the emotional corkscrews. Thumbs, or the heart screws, right? You know, you've heard of thumb screws. Well, these are heart screws. You know, they know how to, like that. Very painful. More painful than thumb screws, let me tell you. Right? Does that make sense? So that means if you want to make it work, you've got to drop a lot of things that are inherently natural to a woman. In other words, you have to take the masculine role and bring this lady into line. Unfortunately, this lady thinks she's senior to you. Right? That's the problem. So in other words, if you go into a scenario where you have an older woman that's really puffed up and really think they're special and have a really big attitude and you want to bring that woman under control, that's what you have to do. So if you're willing to do that, then you'll get somewhere. And if you're not, then you have to look at what's your alternative. Well, this one's rotten on this side and this one's rotten on that side. And this one's rotten on the top, but this one's rotten on the bottom, so like that. And but this one's rotten on both sides, you know. It's really, really happening here. This rotten tomato, you know. So, you know what I'm saying? You're gonna have to. That's the point. Is not much use in dealing with the alternatives. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Yeah. So it's just. The strain? Training. What is this training? Oh, okay. What is the train? It's how you hold it, you know. It's like it's all in the wrist, you know. It's all the time. Training. The first principle of training is respect. Respect is not there. So respect means you're talking about it from the inverse, or you're talking about it in its natural form. It means how to train the brahmacharya, or how to work with, you know, how you say, inferior, what do you call it, goods. Oh, okay, okay. We'll keep it like that. But we'll explain it for the other, okay. So in training the brahmacharya, it's respect. So that comes because the teacher has respect. Right? Teacher has respect for their teacher, has respect for the student as a student, respect for everything in the creation. So respect is the basic principle. Then you have knowledge. That knowledge has to be based on the shastra. So you act according to guru, sadhu, and shastra. Then you have, how you say, humility has to be generated. So that's generated by menial service. Like that, service generates humility. Because without humility, how are you actually going to be practically respectful in all places? And relationship will only be expressed through service, right? Then you need cleanliness. Without cleanliness, there won't be the proper standard for the interaction, for your service, for your knowledge, right? And then you have to have sense control. Without that, you won't have the strength to actually focus and get any of these other things done. Does that make sense? So that's what you're working at. You know, in other words, you can't just pick up the socks. You have to let it be known why socks have to go where they're supposed to go. What's the reason? You know what I'm saying? The saffron cloth. What does the saffron cloth do? Yeah. It's not cheating. I mean, I wouldn't put it into cheating, because then cheating means then you're finding someone at the fault, you're the victim. And so then you can happily sit there and in a depressed state, feeling that you've been cheated, and generate some inspiration from that, some taste from that. It's not a matter of that. It's a matter if you don't know, that's all they can do. You know what I'm saying? Someone who doesn't know how to cook, you can't blame them if what they cooked didn't come out nice, because they just don't know. But someone who's trained and then they don't cook properly, that you can say something about. The point is the reason that brahmacharis aren't trained, because people don't know how to train them. They don't know what a brahmachari is. Right? Because before, they're tough, rough, you know, chew on, you know, chunks of wood for breakfast, you know, spit at the women. Then you're a brahmachari. But that's got nothing to do with brahmacharya. So non-brahmacharis decided that was brahmacharya, and it became very popular because it matches with the boys down at the pub and what they think are men. It's the same mentality. So therefore it worked well, seemingly. But now give it, 20, 30 years, it didn't work at all. And then the problem is then because it was labeled that it was Vedic, right? In other words, the men picked out of the Vedic what they liked, to control women, but didn't take the other parts on how they are to act. So in other words, men control the women, but how do they control the women? It's by their behavior the woman is controlled. Like that. That they missed. The woman is so impressed with your behavior, therefore she's controlled. You did something nice, therefore she serves. You control your senses, you're sensitive, therefore she's loyal. That the men didn't catch, that's the other side of those same points that they use and roll up into a big club and smash the women over the head with. What they didn't understand is their responsibility in that is greater. The woman simply, her responsibility, she's willing to go along for the ride, but the ride is his. You know, it's his 57 Chevy. It's not hers. You know, like that. He's driving the car. But then he wants to say, well, she's a bad passenger. We went off the road because she was a bad passenger, you know. You know, but unfortunately, that's the way it is. Very, very popular. You got, 3 billion men on the planet. And I would say quite a few billion think like this. If they're Asian, African from Africa, South American, parts of Europe, more east, less west, then they'll think less like this. But to some degree, they'll have something. They'll take care of the women, but they'll be very aggressive with them, or they'll take care, but they'll be a little too weak, or, you know, different things. They don't get the balance right. Some do, some don't, but it's more workable. But somehow or another, you cross, you know, into the west, something goes haywire there. I don't know what goes wrong. Absolutely. I was talking to one Indian gentleman about this concept of the couch potato. How the man thinks, you know, I did my job, and now I'm at home, and now it's my time. He couldn't understand what idiot would ever have such a concept. It just didn't, you know, would be saying like, you know, yeah, you know, after lunch I go and jump off the roof, you know, or something like that. You know, it's like, you know, it's just like, who would ever do that? His concept that who would ever think that you would keep a wife and not interact with her? Your job is to get the facility so you can interact. Why wouldn't he interact? Why would he sit on the couch and think, you know, that's perfection? It was a foreign concept. You know, it's like talking about, you know, people with two heads or something. It didn't relate. You know, like that. So there are people where the cultures where they are active, and you see, because of that, therefore their families are successful. And where families aren't successful is because basically the man doesn't know what he's doing. Every woman, no matter how bad she is looking for Mr. Right. And as soon as she gets Mr. Right, she's willing to be Mrs. Right. Right? But if he's not Mr. Right, then I don't know, how does that work? Because then they can go fly their own plane or something, but if he's not right, how is he flying the plane? I'm not sure. How does that work, you know? Ah, okay. It wasn't with the wife, it was with his brother. Okay. Does that make sense? Like that? But unfortunately, this is not really understood. It's not popular. Or the men will hear these things and they'll relate it to one incident or another incident. They'll use it there. They get the result, think this is very good, and then sit back. Okay, then couch potato again. Ah, I did it. Yeah, I know what I'm doing. And then they don't understand that there's no two situations where a woman will ever respond the same. A woman never responds the same ever again. Everything changes. You may get the same response, but it'll be a different situation. But they expect, you know, I did it, and so now it's like that. Every time they go, oh, how do you like the sari? Then I just say, great, honey. And then when she says, well, what do you like about it? Then it's like, well, she's harassing me, you know. What's going on? Why can't she? I said I liked it, you know. Why does she have to harass? You know, it's like, you know, okay, sorry. Like that, you know. Why don't you get a mannequin, right? Dress it up once, one sari. Hey, you only have to buy one sari, you know, like that. Or it depends, you know, who you are, you don't have to buy a sari, hey, you know. So it's just, you know, you know what I'm saying? But it's just, it doesn't make sense. The ego is so big, that's why the brahmacharya is so important, is that you reduce the ego down to something workable. Because there is no place in Shastra where it ever says that you reduce down the woman's ego to something usable. It doesn't say that. Right? In the Shastra, when it talks about reducing the ego, what gender does it use? Male. Right? This is also one of the things that women's liberation. Why does it always say he? Because it's he's supposed to do it. That's why. You know, if he does it, she will do it. But that's the point. Brahmacharya reduces it down to where it's workable. Then you can actually apply the knowledge. And then getting that, you get the faith, and then it progresses, it moves forward. But when the ego is too big, you can't explain what I'm explaining to married men. You just can't. In fact, it's very rare I can ever find a married man where when he comes and he says, you know, I'm having this problem, that problem, that I can actually talk about the actual problem as him. Because when he comes, it's always the wife this, wife that, wife this, wife that. Okay, maybe I could do this, but the wife this, wife that, you know, like that. There's no opening. There's no door. There's not even a keyhole. Nothing. That you can say, well, maybe it's you. Very rare. A few men, okay, what did I do wrong? Then you can explain, no, but this, that, and then, you know, they may accept, they may not. Very few can just say, hey, you did this wrong. They go, oh, okay. Can't. Properly trained brahmacharis? Yes. Not? No chance. Only when they've been completely devastated, destroyed, then at that time, you can say something, but as soon as then they get back up, that's it, door closes. Like that. It's weird. That's why brahmacharya is so important. You don't have to train the women as brahmacharis because they're already sensitive. They're already tuned into these things. They won't be satisfied. And because of that, they'll look everywhere for it. This man, that man, this one, like that. That's their weakness. You know? But if a woman understands the principle, she's trying to protect herself, trying to be satisfied, then a properly trained man can protect her, can make her satisfied. But if the man's not trained, there's no question it'll happen. Okay. I think we should end here. It's getting a little long here. Like that. You know. The windows are closed, you know, and we don't want anyone to die of the heat, you know, from the hot air. Okay. Jai. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivrinda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi.